This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this show on Free Speech TV nationwide and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates. Only days after the Federal Trade Commission approved the mega $13 billion Amazon.com acquisition of Whole Foods, consumers have begun seeing a difference. The online retail giant is known for its low prices, while the upscale grocery chain is often referred to as Whole Paycheck. But Amazon's takeover has manifested in lower prices on some of its products. While that may mean good news for consumers in the short term, does it benefit the public in the long term? The massive acquisition further consolidates a grocery industry that's already dominated by a handful of corporations. And Amazon's Goldman Sachs brokered deal for Whole Foods was incredibly fast-tracked, going from proposal to reality in a matter of just weeks. My guest is Patty Lavera. She is the Assistant Director of Food and Water Watch, and she joins me to discuss what this merger means. Welcome to the program, Patty.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So how shocked were you by how fast this went? I mentioned went from proposal to reality in just a few weeks. Amazon began considering this, hired Goldman Sachs, and then it was done. Suddenly, we have these two giants that are one corporation.
Yeah, I think probably the best description is that we were disappointed, but we weren't super surprised. I mean, this is not the first merger we've seen in the last couple of years in our food system. Unfortunately, it's probably not the last we've seen. We talk about a wave of mergers really hitting every step of the food chain. And especially some deals go to the Department of Justice and some deals go to the Federal Trade Commission. We had hoped they would do their job more thoroughly. They didn't. They really did the bare minimum at the FTC, and they essentially approved it maybe with a day or two extra, but they approved it almost as fast as they could.
Wow. In fact, the Federal Trade Commission's acting director of the Bureau of Competition, which is basically, you know, the part of the agency that is meant to judge whether or not the merger would make competition better or worse, that agency put out a statement saying that the FTC conducted an investigation of this proposed acquisition to determine whether it substantially lessened competition or constituted an unfair method of competition. Based on our investigation, we've decided not to pursue this matter further. Did they really do any kind of investigation? I mean, wouldn't you have to sort of, you know, make some calculations, some projections about what it would mean for such a huge online retailer to take over such a huge brick and mortar grocery chain?
Right. We think so. So we don't understand how they could have possibly begun to wrap their hands around all the potential changes this deal could create in the food system, especially in how we buy our food at retail. They essentially did this in 30 days. That's not extensive enough. There are folks that have, you know, they don't have the full complement of directors at FTC because we're still seeing that in a lot of federal agencies. So we don't think that they did anywhere near the investigation needed for any kind of deal, in the retail sector. But this is also a really important deal because this is not your average retailer. We've seen big deals where, you know, Albertsons and Safeway merge, or Kroger buys, you know, a big regional chain like Harris Teeter. They're both brick and mortar stores. And we have concerns about that. We think that there's, you know, problems that come from that increasing control. But now you're bringing in an internet retailer like Amazon, who has a tremendous economic reach economy-wide. This is bigger than food. And so there's whole other cans of worms that are opened up with this deal that are bigger than just, you know, what are your options for buying organic tea in this city? It's bigger than that when you bring in Amazon, who's becoming this economic behemoth.
I wonder how many of us remember the time when Amazon was basically an online bookstore. Remember that? It was just an online bookstore. And then I think it expanded into DVDs. And now you can actually buy groceries on Amazon. And it had attempted to break into the grocery market with its Amazon Fresh arm. I'm not sure how much success it had, but I suppose the Whole Foods acquisition is Amazon's attempt to make that a reality, right?
Yes, there's a lot, lots of commentary and lots of speculation about why this deal. I mean, Whole Foods had actually kind of been out there as a target. Maybe someone's going to buy them. That wasn't super shocking. What was shocking is that it was Amazon. And there's a lot of speculation about what does Amazon intend to do. And there's a lot of thought that they intend to experiment. It's actually really hard to deliver food. I mean, it's one thing to deliver coffee or, you know, maybe cookies that aren't perishable. It's hard to deliver, you know, dairy products and produce, and it's actually really tricky. And so with the acquisition of Whole Foods, you have 400 and some brick and mortar stores that maybe you're playing with as a platform to figure out how to deliver food. And then the book example, we think, is hugely important, that piece of history that they started as a bookseller. Yes. If you look at what has become of the publishing industry, it's not good. And Amazon, a lot of the blame for that gets laid at the doorstep of Amazon. So if they turn food, especially organic, natural, you know, kind of innovative food companies, if they turn them into the loss leader that they turned books into, which is that they'll underprice those items to get you on the site. You come for the food and you stay to buy some TV shows or maybe some hardware or, you know, some decorative item, right? I mean, you don't want to be the good that they're using to lure people onto that site if you're the supplier of that good that they're underpricing.
And I think that's such an important point. I mean, you can't, I suppose, blame Amazon entirely for the disappearance of independent bookstores and even in really brick and mortar bookstores in general. Even the big book giants like Barnes & Noble and Borders are not doing well. I don't even know if Borders is around anymore. But it's probably no coincidence that the rise of Amazon as an online bookseller coincided with the decline of actual bookstores, physical bookstores. So here's what's really interesting, of course. So you have this online retail giant that prides itself on undercutting other retailers. You can buy stuff on Amazon that's cheaper than almost anywhere else. Now, it's bought a company that it's known for its high prices, also known for a variety of, as you said, natural, healthy, organic foods, but that food has often been out of reach for a lot of ordinary Americans, hence the name Whole Paycheck. What do you think Amazon is going to do? What sort of experiments will it run on its Whole Foods stores? Because you have kind of two ends of the price spectrum here.
That's the billion-dollar question at this point.
$13 billion.
A lot of people think they're gonna experiment and they're gonna try different things. So we mentioned this earlier. One of the big question marks in food right now is delivery. You know, do you deliver to people's doorsteps? That's really hard. It's really expensive. Do you have them order it and they come to a store and pick it up? And I think there's gonna be a lot of experiments around that. So there's a huge labor question there. What kind of jobs are they? Where are you gonna have a job? Is it a good job? Is it, you know, tremendously under pressure? You're a picker in a warehouse. That's different. You know, I mean, what kind of workforce do you have for this new model of how we buy groceries? There's a lot of thought that they're going to experiment with more automation. So Amazon has opened a couple of experimental stores in Seattle where there aren't cashiers because you're scanning it all with your phone. So that's a workforce issue. You know, what are they going to do to change the way retail looks? And then when it comes to the food itself, you know, no one's saying that, you know, there was no markup at Whole Foods. A lot of people call it home markup as well, right? There was a pretty big margin,
right,
between what they were paying their suppliers and what you paid as a consumer. And there was a lot of tremendously successful marketing, but they did also do some things that were different. We've talked to farmers in different parts of the country who were able to go from maybe they were selling direct to consumers, you know, literally at a farmer's market, not in a retail setting. They never saw a way that they could ever supply a Safeway or a Kroger. They're too big. They could never get into that distribution system. There are people in different parts of the country for whom Whole Foods represented an entry point in between, and we've lost a lot of those in between steps. And so there's a lot of folks who are worried if Whole Foods stops that tradition, you know, of a lot of independence for each store to go out and find some local foods to stock, and they have to deal with some kind of centralized regional or national distribution chain, they can't play in that system. They're
right.
Not big.
And right. So you're saying that was one of the things that Whole Foods was getting right. And it's true. I mean, the times that I've stepped into Whole Foods, you can find, you know, locally roasted organic coffee from someone who's actually producing it in the city that store is in. And so they have made some attempts to bring in local small scale producers of food, independent farmers, et cetera, into their giant stores, which I suppose was one thing that they were doing right. But the markup, that sort of huge markup that made healthy, good food inaccessible to poor Americans, that, of course, was a problem, right? And could Amazon do the right thing there, or is it just going to end up putting indie farmers out of business?
We don't know yet. It depends how they do it. And it depends, you know, and we see tremendous pressure that we need to do it the right way. You know, we want organic farmers and folks supplying our regional market. We want them to have as many options as they can have. And if they get bigger, that's great. If they're able to get bigger the right way. What we worry about is somebody, you know, is doing everything right for the environment, has great practices, a really sustainable farm. Maybe they can supply 10 Whole Foods. They probably are never going to be able to scale up, especially not in California, not in Texas, but in, you know, the East Coast, smaller farms. They're never going to be able to scale up to supply 100 stores. So what do they, who is Amazon going to, who are they going to source from if they need to take that volume sky high really quickly, which is their model? And that takes us more to larger farms. We worry about the organic standards, a lot of pressure that those standards get weaker, so it's easier for stuff to be organic. We worry about that really fast growth actually changing what that system is.
And so those are, of course, really important questions, because I know that a lot of the work that Food or Water Watch is involved in is things like the quality of our food, where it comes from, how it's produced, and how it's, you know, who gets access to it. Those are really important questions. Food is not a luxury. Food is something we all depend on. Let's talk about the consolidation of the grocery retail industry. Why? I mean, you know, you certainly have advantage when you've got large scale production, and you can, you know, if you look at sort of traditional economic models, supply foods for less money if you can buy them wholesale. However, don't we have far too few companies dominating our food industry right now? And if so, why is that bad? Why is that bad for the average consumer?
Yeah, it's a great question. And it is a trend we've seen, really. We think that at the root of a lot of the things that people are unhappy with when they learn more about the food supply. So one way we think about it is as a little picture. If we were ever doing, you know, a presentation and we can show people pictures, we show them kind of an hourglass. And we have a lot of farmers at the top, even more consumers at the bottom, but there's a bottleneck in the middle. Like, so the hourglass gets skinny in the middle for all those steps of, you know, harvesting the crop, processing it, turning it into some processed food, and taking it to the store. We've lost competitors in those middle steps. The hourglass has gotten skinnier. When that hourglass gets skinnier, those companies have more power. They have more power in that individual marketplace, right? They're selling more of the percentage of, you know, meat or bread or whatever it is. And it gives them more power over everything else. How much are they going to pay the farmers and sell their crops? How much are they going to pay the workers in their plants? And there's fewer places for those workers to look. There's fewer places for those farmers to look to have another option to get more, you know, to get a more fair deal. And it gives them more power over how the food's produced. Are they going to use GMOs? Are they going to do, you know, something that's better for the environment or something that's worse? If we don't have those options as consumers, it's harder for us to get away from that. So there's a lot of control economically and otherwise. And also with that economic power, they also go lobby against us, right? They go change the rules on things like labeling or trade deals or whatever else. So they get a really tight control over all of the steps, and we're left with less options.
What does the fact that Goldman Sachs brokered this deal have to do with anything? I mean, these days when we think about Goldman Sachs, what comes to mind immediately is how many of its former executive employees are now in the Trump administration. Do you think that might have had anything to do with how fast this deal was approved? And the fact that there was some sort of investigation that they claim that was made, but we, you know, couldn't possibly have done it in 30 days?
It's a good question. It's a very, you know, it's a many federal processes that we work in aren't super transparent, but this one is brutal. We don't know what they did. They don't have to tell us. There's no public comment period. They just have this window where they say they're looking at it and they can say we're good, or we're going to do a second layer investigation. And this time they were just like, we're good with the first layer. There are legitimate questions to ask. And some of it is, you know, even aside from the political connections, which are real, and, you know, we have to wonder what the influence is inside these agencies. This is what Wall Street wants, right? They make these Wall Street investors, the banks who underwrite these deals, they make money just because a deal happens. And then Wall Street puts pressure on these companies. It's not even that they're losing money. They're just not growing fast enough. The food industry tends to grow a little slower than other industries because they sell a lot of food, it's harder to get people to buy more food every year, right? There is a limit, even though we keep eating more junk food.
There's only so much we can eat, right?
That's and we can true. Export some, right? But at some point, you know, and it's not that the food industry doesn't grow. It doesn't grow fast enough for Wall Street. Mm. And that's been driving a lot of these deals. So they want bigger, you know, more aggressive conglomerates. And then the banks like Goldman Sachs can actually make money when these deals happen. So it's all these forces kind of converging.
Are you suggesting that free market capitalism might not be compatible with basic needs of human beings?
You know, you kind of end up there. And, you know, we had this whole conversation about how are we making the food people need, the right food raised the right way? How do we make it cheaper? You can also flip that around and say, why do people not earn enough to buy what they need, right? I mean, we've had how many decades of people not getting a raise, essentially, and then combine that with this deregulatory trend of how many decades that makes it acceptable to do stuff that isn't okay.
Right. Why do lower income people eat so much fast food? Because they can't afford to shop at Whole Paycheck or Whole Markup.
they're not having enough extra time for the juicing trend or whatever when you work three jobs and you commute a long way, right? I mean, we can't put all of this on the price of food. We have to put a lot of it in the context of people's economic power. And then we also have to say, if these things can be done better, we should have a regulatory system for food that makes them done better for everybody's food. So there's absolutely savings that could be had in like a Whole Foods environment. A lot of that is marketing and packaging and convenience. But at its core, we need to talk about why people don't have what they need to buy healthy food.
The other aspect of why people don't have access to healthy food is food deserts, right? I mean, I don't know how many Whole Foods open up in economically depressed areas. I mean, in my own neighborhood, you wouldn't get a Whole Foods, you wouldn't even get a Trader Joe's. And, you know, I always have to drive outside of my neighborhood to get to one of these health food stores or stores that sell healthier food. I'm wondering if you think the Amazon acquisition of Whole Foods might change that?
It's a good question. There's been lots of talk about this, and it kind of is a litmus test of whether you're a glass half full or glass half empty person, what your opinion of that is. You know, supermarkets, and especially, you know, there's kind of different niches in supermarkets of what their ideal demographic is. Trader Joe's knows their demographic, right? Whole Foods knows where they want to be, and they're very careful about where they open. So actually, one of the other yet another aspect of this deal is a lot of people think Amazon was probably pretty happy to get access to the customer data of Whole Foods, which is a very wealthy, you know, in a certain demographic, right? That's pretty desirable. So then the question of food deserts comes up. Is the problem that can be solved in food deserts, is it delivery? I'm a little skeptical of that. I think there's lots of other kind of social forces at play about why folks can't access the food they need in their neighborhoods. I'm not sure delivering that food to their doorsteps is a practical solution, but there are folks who are very optimistic about that. But again, I think we just still have to think about what is Amazon not going to sell us? And they're very anxious to get everybody to be a Prime member. And there's a lot of the perks they drive you towards that. And we think we're going to see that at Whole Foods, that Prime members get more discounts. And they've already talked about can pilot projects to get folks who are using food assistance like SNAP, can they get into Prime?
Right.
Maybe there's some benefit there, but
you have to buy that Prime membership, right? Which may be out of reach of a lot of folks.
Right. And just also the level of control. And so if they become their patient, and if they use food as a way to really get people into their buying ecosystem, so other folks can't outlast them and go out of business, and then if Amazon is the last one standing, and it sounds kind of dire, but we could get to that point if other retailers don't last, then they can charge anything they want if their competitors have gone away. So there's also a long game worry here that if they're the ones selling us everything, that gives them a lot of power, and they might be cheap now, but do they have any incentive to keep it cheap?
Right. And we know Amazon has a history of wanting to play the long game and actually winning because they have the ability to wait it out. Finally, Patty, what does Food and Water Watch recommend needs to happen? I mean, is this a done deal or are you still appealing or can people still appeal the Federal Trade Commission?
Unfortunately, no. It's a very closed process. There wasn't really much public input. We put some in. It didn't seem like they were super interested in hearing it. Mm. What we need to do is, I think, use this as a moment to talk about how do we look at mergers? How do we look at, you know, the food system is just one microcosm. We're seeing this in every industry, banking, communications, airlines, you name it, we've seen these mergers and we have fewer players and they're more powerful. So, I mean, we want people to be talking about how do we evaluate this? Like the way we're using old guidelines from the Reagan era and they're not working when you talk about the internet and grocery stores together. They're not able to measure that. So, you know, we've seen some speeches recently about the Democratic Party thinking about these economic issues. We need people talking to their elected officials about we are not evaluating this right and it's time for a new approach to how we look at these mergers.
Patty, I want to thank you so much for joining us today. Give out a website for Food and Water Watch.
Sure. People can check out all kinds of stuff at foodandwaterwatch.org.
We'll post a link to that from our website later today. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Patty Lavera is the Assistant Director of Food and Water Watch, and we've been discussing the Amazon-Whole Foods merger. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also find us on Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, and Vimeo.